Okay, welcome back to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast. I am here with the boys. We're back. We got Thomas, we got Walker, and we got Ed. My name is Drew. And in today's episode, we're going to be reviewing the Chinese Grand Prix and all of the drama from 2024's first sprint race of the season. Ferrari did not shine as they expected to do. So, what's next for the Scuderia? Can Ferrari's promised upgrades help them close the gap to Red Bull, or is it too little, too late? With the tension mounting between Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc, is this the push that Charles needs in order to dominate once again? All of this and much more on this episode of Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast. So, with the first sprint race of 2024 season behind us, what did you guys think of how things played out with the qualifying? Walker.
So, I will say this. I thought the sprint weekend was a lot more enjoyable in, let's call it like the V3 era of sprint weekends. I thought the schedule was a lot more conducive to a better weekend overall. I thought having two kind of Parc Fermé conditions were also really helpful for the teams, letting them prepare properly for the race and also for the sprint weekend. And overall, you know, I think it really delivered. Obviously, weather was a big factor that helped. Without the weather, would it have just been another dominant Max performance? Probably, but we got a little bit of rain, which helped spice things up. We look at the race itself. Did it really matter? No, because he came back and he won anyways by I don't know how many seconds he was putting on the field. Per lap, like it was a second a lap, wasn't it? Something ridiculous like that. But in the era of Formula One sprint weekends, I would say this has probably been my favorite for all the reasons I just talked about. Thomas, what do you got?
So I didn't watch the sprint race live as it happened, but I did watch the highlights, and man, those were some juicy highlights. You know, it almost felt like half of the race. Essentially, there's lots of action. What you, Walker, said, there was a spice up in the grid, some good battles. The race itself was phenomenal. So I hope to see way more of these types of sprints and also these types of races in the future, especially the sprints where it's so, it was so competitive, this sprint, I felt, and it was interesting to watch. Ed?
I was surprisingly disappointed with Max Verstappen for the sprint. I know him to be a good wet weather driver. He showed himself a few years ago in Interlagos, wherein he just like destroyed everyone in the rain and uncharacteristically did not perform in China. I mean, I will say, though, that he was not that season yet on that track, so I may play into that idea that maybe it's lack of experience on the track. And that's where, I mean, we saw the old guard really showing up, Alonso and Hamilton, like really showing their chops in terms of like understanding where the grip is in Shanghai. So yeah, definitely a good, you know, a good turnout in terms of action. Not the typical Max Verstappen win for the sprint. But the race, as we all know, like he pretty much destroyed everyone, which I will allude to in terms of like how much time was the difference between him and all the way down to the Ferraris. But yeah,
I think this illustrates like the perfect time we're in, where we consider a P4 qualifying and a dominant like P1 win disappointing for Max Verstappen.
Yeah,
like it's absolutely ridiculous that is like a quote-unquote disappointing weekend. Maybe some other cars that did have a more quote-unquote disappointing. I mean, if that's disappointing, then what the fuck do you call what happened to Ferrari? Because they were kind of nowhere this weekend. Am I right?
Yeah, big time.
They were, I mean, being the incumbent, you know, second constructor, you know, they didn't really seem to have anything on either of those days or either of those sprints. Drew, what did you think about that?
You know what? Like, I really enjoyed to kind of summarize what I thought about the sprint and the sprint qualifying. Like, you know, to have a wet SQ3 was fantastic, right? Because like we just had a big mix up of the grid when like it was super exciting to watch. We had, you know, Lewis Hamilton get provisional pole and then Lando's lap get reinstated. And like that was, it was just exciting. It was something fun to watch again. And ultimately, you know, going back to the Max Verstappen point, like, you know, the reality is that if it was a completely dry weekend, Max would have had pole position in the sprint race and he would have won the sprint race by a larger amount than he already did. And to Walker's point too, like, you know, Max was lapping a second and something faster. Like, you know, he passed Lewis in the, I think the fifth or something lap on the sprint race. And in the resulting 15 laps, he was like almost 20 seconds ahead. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, that's an absolutely ridiculously dominant car. And Max's, you know, we spoke about this last year and like Max needed to kind of grow into his patience, which he has now because he realizes that him and that car are just such a dominant force that he's able to kind of wait back a little bit and get a little bit more time and space in between them instead of trying to, you know, dive bomb the first couple corners and make up all those positions. He's a little bit more patient, which shows some maturity for Max. But like, you know, the sprint race was absolutely awesome. And it kind of sucked to watch Lando, you know, go from second place or first place all the way down to seventh in the first corner because he just got so greedy. Like the way him and Lewis were going around that first and second corner there, like all he had to do was concede that spot and he would have been on a podium. You know, there was a really good shot of him being on a podium in that sprint race. And I think that kind of just shows the immaturity and the, I don't know if it's a combination of immaturity or if it's Lando just not being patient anymore. You know, with Oscar winning that sprint race last year, like I think he just wants a W on his belt. And I think that this kind of just, you know, was so close for him. He could taste it. And it just showed in his inability to show that same patience that Max does at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think Lando's actions that first lap, it almost felt more, instead of an experience or maturity, it almost felt like more desperation, right? Like, I got to get, like, this is my time. I got to do something with this. I finally got a, you know, a decent position. And he just, it just kind of reached a little bit of desperation in terms of what he was trying to do on that first corner, right? And really trying to hold on without, you know, taking into account the rest of the race. We've talked a lot about Max being an incredibly dominant driver, obviously, over the last few seasons. I want to switch the question up a little bit. And I want to ask you about the most exciting driver on the grid right now. And I think those are two different things. So we have Max, obviously dominant, technically superior. I'm going to put the case out that right now, Fernando Alonso is the most exciting, entertaining. I'm going to kind of like merge those two qualities together. The most exciting and entertaining driver on the grid. Am I right or am I wrong, Drew?
100% you're right. Like as soon as you brought up that question in my head, I'm like, if he doesn't go to Fernando Alonso on this, he's absolutely crazy. Because Fernando, you know, has this, I don't know, this ageless factor about him. Like the dude's 42 years old and he's absolutely smashing it. Like his reflexes are crazy. He's super aggressive going into every corner with every driver. You know, I don't know if we're going to touch on this later, but like the fact that Aston Martin decided to pit them, you know, after the first safety car for a set of softs, like just because you have the soft tires that are brand new in your garage doesn't mean you need to use them. They were obviously not the best tire for this circuit and they threw them on. And like just to watch Fernando like weave through the traffic again and end up, what did he get? Seventh place behind George. Like, you know, the fact that Mercedes got 6 and 9, even with that dumb pit stop, like I think Fernando would have definitely been in the top five because he was in fourth place when they pitted him for those tires, right? Which was a stupid move. He could have been in fourth place all day on that. But, you know, but back to your point, Walker, like he's just super exciting to watch. And I think that, you know, it just shows that like, if you dedicate your time to this, that age isn't a factor. And like, you know, these young guns coming in here are awesome, but like his reaction, like coming out of that last corner onto that last straight, like when he almost binned it and put it into the gravel there and caught himself, which Carlos Sainz did the day before in qualies and absolutely spun that car around, just shows that like, you know, he's got the combination of the maturity, the experience, but then also still has that like that killer driver instinct, which I thought was kind of cool. What do you got on that one, Ed?
I completely agree with you. And what you had just mentioned on that final corner before, you know, the end of the race, or not necessarily the end of the race, or end of the track rather, is that him catching that gravel slip just like encompasses everything that we know about Fernando Alonso, his experience, still his like his reaction time and being able to just like really control the race. And that's, I think that's the theme for me for the Chinese Grand Prix. It's like, it shows if you have experience, it shows if you have the pedigree to really race and have the chops to like take it to the kids, and you can and you will. I mean, both Lewis and Alonso showed that this weekend.
So yeah, I'm gonna agree with you guys. I'm gonna build up a little bit on top of it. Basically, Alonso, you know, when Walker said top driver, essentially my mind went to Alonso automatically. Part of it was because you know, he got the contract extension with Aston Martin. The way he's performed recently in the races, it's like almost this meme, you know, the longer he races in F1, it almost seems like he's aging backwards. He keeps getting younger, and you know, obviously he brings experience to the table too. That drift catch, essentially, when I saw it on live and when I saw the replay, that was like a holy shit moment, you know, like this, that really blew my mind. He's definitely one of the best drivers to watch out for, I think, with the most, not necessarily most potential, but most entertaining. I am going to add a little bit on top of it. I am also going to say Carlos Sainz, from what I've seen, honestly, not this race, but the previous races. I think he's in his own league as well a little bit and does not give a fuck. And he's pushing that car as much as he can. So I'm really rooting for him as well. He's good to, good to watch as well, like the way he performs.
It's his villain season, dude. Like, he doesn't give a crap exactly about anything. Absolutely anything. Like, he is going to run his race. He is going to take it to every single driver on the grid, and zero fucks will be given this season for Carlos Sainz. And so
can
excited.
We give an honorable mention to the other Aston Martin driver, and obviously for very different reasons, but
hold on, I'm going to get there in a second. We're going to get there. If you want to go there right now, you can. Please, go for it.
Okay.
All right, go.
Let's just summarize this and just say Aston Martin's the most exciting team on the grid then, you know, for Fernando Alonso, for all these amazing reasons. And then you have your buddy Lance Stroll on this one, who's super exciting to watch for all the wrong reasons, because we're just excited to see what he's going to do next that will jeopardize his race, the race of others around him, and just overall shenanigans, I guess, would suffice on that one. Where did you want to go with this one, Walker?
Well, I was going to say from the most exciting to the most hated on the grid, I think Aston's got it all. I have a follow-up question for that, but I mean, I think this is now the point in the podcast where Drew, Thomas, and myself have to step back. We're going to give Ed his space. Ed? Lance Stroll, take it away, buddy.
Safe space. Dude, just leave Formula One, for Christ's sake. Leave. What have you contributed? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because your dad is the owner of the team, that's all you can contribute. You are a waste of space, a waste of a seat. Please, you cannot drive. You hear me? Please leave the grid. Give it to someone else. Give it to Kimi Antonelli for all I care. Just come on, man. Safety car. Ricardo. Guy was about to score points this weekend. What did you do? And you had the audacity to call him an idiot. Clearly, you don't know what the word means, because you personify that word, idiot, idiosyncrasy, whatever, however you want to put it. Just leave Formula One to the real drivers. And you, by the way, you can include Logan Sargeant into the mix as well. Just bring him with you. Just give us better drivers. Leave the sport. Please, I beg of you. Safe space. All right, gents, go ahead. I'm going to take a breather.
Does anyone have a follow-up to that?
I don't think it's really a follow-up. I have a two, like, I thought Logan Sargeant actually didn't have any eyes on him this weekend for the same reason, because, you know, if we're going to take the two, in my opinion, the worst drivers of the day, let's go with Lance Stroll for very obvious reasons that you touched on. You know, when the safety car was already in and everybody was in the train, you know, you had Fernando Alonso stopped, and then George Russell had to stop. Oscar Piastri had to stop. And that's where, you know, Danny Ricciardo was right behind Piastri. And like, they all kind of had that train effect because of the lockup that Fernando Alonso had, and he went super deep into it. And then, you know, Lance Stroll was not paying attention in the slightest, and he just rear-ended him completely, which jeopardized his race entirely. And I don't know. I would argue that that RB car did not have the pace to score points later on, but you took away Danny Ric's potential to score his first points of the season. And I just think that, you know, it's really unfair that that Danny Ric got shit on for that. But, you know, that's the name of the game, right? That's the sport. But in that same token, I think that, you know, Nico Hülkenberg on Yuki Tsunoda afterwards, that would almost, like, I would argue that Lance Stroll was kind of just, like, put in the back end of that shitty situation where all those guys got jammed up. What Hülkenberg did to Tsunoda was just, like, murder. Like, he just jumped in on that guy and absolutely just, like, you know, he cut in so deep, and then the car kind of drifted a little bit, but like did not give Yuki enough side or enough space on the outside there to come back in and just sideswipe Yuki. Because like, if you look at the onboards, like, you know, Hülkenberg was, or not, Kevin Magnussen, sorry, Magnussen was like not even in eyesight. So he had no idea what was happening, right? And so, yeah, I think K-Mag is probably going to be, you know, worst driver of the day, secondary. Lance Stroll still gets it because I listened to the onboards too. I wanted to really make sure that he said, this is an absolute idiot. And I wasn't sure if he said they were absolute idiots because he was talking about the group of cars or if he was talking about Danny Ricciardo specifically. That being said, I couldn't really fully make it out. So he's still in that pack ahead of him. So he called all of those guys idiots, which I don't think is fair or true. So I don't know. That's kind of my follow-up on that.
I don't know. Not much to add to what you guys said. Stroll, I'm pretty sure we all talked about this in the Discord, how he's such a quote-unquote shitty driver to represent us Canadians, and it's kind of embarrassing to a point. We all know why he's there, daddy's money, blah, blah, blah. I agree with that. I would want to go off. Obviously, I'm not going to, but I would go off. He's an idiot, especially after this race. He is taking up a seat for a potential great driver that could be in that car and actually doing way more good for the team and F1 than he currently is, which is sad and disappointing. And to finish it off, I think Lance Stroll is an idiot.
So to follow up on this conversation, Drew, you touched on it, and this was going to be my follow-up question. Who's the most hated driver on the grid right now, Stroll or Magnussen?
I think it's Stroll.
I think Stroll. The common denominator is Stroll. Like, I think if you ask people in the paddock, it would be Stroll. And if you ask, you know, the drivers, I think Lance Stroll is probably the worst for this. Like, I think Logan gets away with it because he's just like quiet and nice. Like, he's a bad driver, but when you're 20th place, at least you can't hit anyone else. You know what I mean? Like, he's not jeopardizing anyone else's race. Where Lance Stroll has a wildly competitive car and he uses that to everyone else's disadvantage. But yeah, I think he's definitely the most hated guy on the grid. And, you know, to Thomas's point, though, I think that, like, you know, what are you providing to F1? But like, his dad came in and like saved a team that was not doing so well and like totally like revamped them, got a new sponsorship. I think Lance Stroll brought daddy's money to F1, because if he was interested in, I don't know, hot air balloons or some shit, we wouldn't have an Aston Martin team in Formula One, right? So ultimately, like, we needed his money, but I don't think that that he's, you know, him taking up a seat like that is great for the future of the Aston Martin team. And if daddy wants to make some money with the team and, you know, do some good things in the future of F1, I think that Lance has to take a back seat soon. So
interesting answers, because I would argue that Magnussen is right there with him, given the way that he drives sometimes. You know, we can look back to what race was it? When he was holding up like a pack of seven drivers.
Yes.
Right? Is it allowing like, what was like a 30-second gap because, what's his name?
Because he wanted a penalty. He wanted Nico Hülkenberg.
Yeah, because he had a penalty. he takes out Tsunoda on this race. So it just seems like he's battling Lance for that title of perhaps the most hated driver on the track. But do we want to go back to Ferrari for a second? Because I know they had a bit of a disappointing weekend. We just glanced over them. They're bringing upgrades apparently next race, I should say, which is in 2 weeks in Miami. Do we think that they are still the incumbent second constructor on the grid right now? Or is McLaren, who are also bringing upgrades to Miami, going to put a real challenge?
I think that Ferrari is, you know, I think this was a bad track for them. I don't think that Ferrari showed up in the way that they really wanted to. I think McLaren had a faster car for this specific Grand Prix. But I think that, you know, the way that the two Ferrari guys are going, that they're pushing each other to drive faster and better. And, you know, I think it's a fun and dangerous combination that they have, where they have a guy signed for a long time who's gunning to be the number one seat. And I guess he is the incumbent, Charles Leclerc, over Sainz. And now that Sainz is the most eligible bachelor in the F1 world, I think that he has the, you know, I don't give an F attitude in terms of him being able to push the limit in terms of, you know, what team orders are and him not caring. I think that Ferrari's drivers are really learning to work with the car that they have right now, and they're really pushing what they have. But short answer, Walker, I think that they are the incumbent to Red Bull. I think they're the ones that are, you know, over the course of the 24 races this season, I think that they're going to be the closest to them. I don't think McLaren's there yet, but we'll see what happens coming up in Miami based on the two upgrades. Because, you know, even if these guys are getting, you know, 200ths of a second faster per lap, they're still 800ths of a second slower than Red Bull at this point. So there's a lot of ways to go. But I think as far as an incumbent, yeah, I think that that's Ferrari.
I agree with you, Drew. I don't see McLaren catching up to Red Bull for sure, let alone Ferrari. To your point, Drew, Ferrari, their drivers, they're pushing each other. Sainz doesn't really care anymore. You know, he's out of a contract, so he's just doing his own thing. And as Ed said, he's being the villain. And so far from what I've seen, it looks really, really good, the outcome of it. For this next race in Miami with McLaren and Ferrari bringing upgrades, it's hard to tell who's gonna do well or more well than the other team, just because it is a street circuit, and I'm split. I don't know who's gonna do well, McLaren or Ferrari. So it's gonna be definitely an interesting outcome to look forward to.
It's difficult to say, because if you look at the past few races, Ferrari has been consistent in trailing Red Bull. But if we were to talk about this specific race, I wouldn't say so. But again, like, give me some time on this. Leclerc and Sainz were both 23 and 33 seconds away from Max at the end of the race. So that's a very substantial amount of time. But then again, like, Max was clearing a second a lap. If I were to, let's say, Ferrari might be scheming a little bit and taking a page out of McLaren's playbook last season by holding back upgrades, not necessarily pushing their car to the extent that they know that they were not going to be competitive for Shanghai and might be more competitive in Miami and all the other succeeding races. So to them, is that, let's score points, let's not crash, let's try to get constructor points as well, and then once the upgrade comes, then you guys can start really pushing and see how far does the car go.
I think it's I think we'll wait and see. I think there's lots of races left. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens between Ferrari and McLaren. Don't have much more to add, because I think you guys all touched on it quite eloquently. I want to touch on a couple other things for China before we move on. And just a couple of themes. Maybe this is just going to be sharing some themes that I kind of picked up on. One of them was, I really thought, you guys know the song, Mama Gonna Knock You Out, LL Cool J. don't call it a comeback, right? You know that line? I kept thinking that over and over again because I feel like there was a lot of resurgent performances in the race, even though the final results don't necessarily reflect that. You had Bottas up, you know, in the top 10 for a while. He had a great car until his engine shit the bed. Until he didn't. You had Danny Ricciardo kind of coming back against Tsunoda, right? Performing a little bit better than him on this weekend. You had Leclerc placed higher than signed for the first time in a number of races. So I thought you were starting to see a lot of parity through the rest of the teams and the rest of races, in even though it maybe wasn't reflected on those final results. So I am excited to see kind of how that plays forward at a track like Miami, which can be tricky, which can be fast. And always makes, I don't know if it's my favorite track, but it always makes for interesting races somehow. The last point I want to talk about this weekend is the little Joe shrine at the P4 equivalent almost setup they had for him pulling in onto the main straight. I have my own opinions on this. What did you guys think of that little show of national pride?
I thought it was a class act by F1.
Yeah.
Like, I understand the, you know, the other point of it that, like, you know, who else gets that? You know, where like, does Lance Stroll get the Canadian welcome? You know what I mean? But
Latifi,
I think, you know,
Stroll on the...
Oh, that would just...
Can you imagine on, like, the...
Biblical. No, I was listening to an interview that Joe Grenu did right before the Grand Prix weekend. And he was talking about, you know, how excited he was and how proud he was of, like, racing. And, you know, they have a Joe Grenu, like, grandstand, and it sold out in like 4 minutes and it crashed the app. And he was so excited. And, you know, to really see the support, because, you know, I was listening to Crofty talk about, you know, Formula One in China before. And, you know, from his experience, they only really like to cheer for winners. You know, the Chinese as like a whole, like, they don't cheer for like 14th best driver. You know, when they go to the Olympics or they do sports or whatever they do, like, they want winners. And so, you know, they were really nervous about Zhou Guanyu being kind of like put to the back burner, because they have a lot of Lewis Hamilton fans there. They got a lot of Ferrari fans there. And, you know, to see everyone kind of show up for Zhou Guanyu in a big way. And every time he passed somebody from 16th to 15th place, you know, the whole place lit up, which was for nothing, right, in terms of scoring points. But it was just really nice to see the support. And, you know, to be the first Chinese driver, you know, racing in China, and especially because it was the 20th anniversary of them racing in China, I thought that it was classy enough. And, you know, does every other driver get it? No. Is this a special scenario? Maybe. I don't know. I just thought it was pretty classy. He got pretty emotional and bent out over it on the grid, but it was good to see. That's my two cents on it.
I thought personally it was a bit cheesy, but I didn't see your point of view. So I definitely do agree with your point of view. To my experience, I think he got a little bit of a special treatment. Some of the facts are what you mentioned, Drew, you know, first Chinese driver. But I also think he brings a lot of money by being in F1 and for the team and everything. And I think that's why they kind of wanted to pep him up, I guess, a little bit and show that support. And yeah, so I don't know. I don't know how I feel. I don't necessarily think it was necessary and it wasn't really needed. I do get it now from, you know, having heard your point of view. I understand it. But I don't know. I still thought it was a little bit cheesy.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. The way I see it is that Liberty Media is trying to get that market share. It's been 4 years since the last race in China. And the grid back then to the grid now is very, very different. The only one that will probably recognize is Alonso, a little bit of Hulkenberg, and Lewis Hamilton. So there are new fans there. The older fans, I'm sure, are still there. They were there to watch because it's back in China. But the newer fans, the Drive to Survive fans, the new, you know, the newbies that started to get into automotive racing and started to get into Formula One, I think that's what they were trying to do. They were playing towards, you have a representative within the grid, celebrate him, support the sport, follow it to Liberty Media, that's market share. That's dollars. It's a good play. I mean, it is cheesy. I agree with you, Tomas, but it's a good play for them, and it's a lot of people to be able to watch and get subscriptions. So, yeah, good play, Liberty Media.
Well, I didn't like it, but that's just me.
I knew that was coming.
I just figured, like, you gotta earn that spot. You gotta earn that little fucking stanchion, right? I don't know. That's just me, but I get the whole point. I think it was nice. I think there are lots of ways they could have done that instead of him lining up awkwardly behind like the top three cars. I think optically it just looked a little weird. And you know what? He would have gotten the exact same applause, the exact same emotion of him getting out in 15th behind all the other cars, getting ready to be examined for Parc Fermé and standing up. And I thought that would have been a, you know what, I actually probably would have preferred it more because I felt it would have been a little bit more raw, less staged, less put on. Like, this was like choreographed, right? It was like, let's choreograph and produce emotion and produce a moment where you would have gotten that same raw emotion from him and from the crowd if he was just standing on his car back in 15th place, lined up, waiting to get weighed. And I think that would have created a more visceral, real moment instead of, the moment would have happened regardless, right? It's just how it was overly produced. I was not a fan of it. I think if you are going to be, you know, on that starting, by that start finish line, I think you need to earn it the same way as like they wouldn't bring him up on the podium to like fucking cry for 5 minutes. But anyways, I'm happy for Zhou. I'm glad he had some time, his time in China. And moving on. We are going to move on to a new segment of the show. I'm going to get Drew to talk about the name of the segment, and then we'll hop into the question and go from there.
Yeah, so you know, we have a Discord channel, so let's throw that plug in here right now. If you've listened up until this point, thank you. We love you. Please like, subscribe, share this with your friends, do all that good stuff. You guys know how to do it. All the links are in the show notes in terms of like our Discord, our Instagram, TikTok, social media, all that good stuff. But what I wanted to do is start having some more interactive stuff going on. So we're going to have the mailbox box, where listeners can you know, send us some questions or topics or things they want us to talk about on the podcast. We'll give them a big shout out and we'll discuss some of the things that that they really want to talk about. So one of our buddies, Derek B, who's a big supporter and friend of the podcast, he wanted to know what we thought about F1 now trying to hand out points to the top 12 drivers. Is it worth it? And what that will mean going forward for F1.
Box, 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 box.
Derek, thank you for the question. Put that out to you boys. What do you guys think about F1 making some changes to how the point scoring system is going?
Well, I had no idea this was happening until about, I don't know, half an hour ago when I read the show notes. I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. I guess here's my only take on this. I wonder if this is the first phase in opening the door for more teams on the grid, right? Because you change the rules around a little bit. So instead, yeah, it's 12 out of 20 teams right now, but does this make it more amenable for those teams that were maybe trying to deny an Andretti getting in to the idea of having more teams? Because now they know the chances at points. They're not fighting for 10 points or 10 places out of 22 teams. Now they're fighting for 12 places out of 22 teams or 24 team or 24 drivers, whatever it might be. So that is kind of where my head went with it. If they want to give a few extra points to people on the grid now, like, sure, whatever. I don't think it's really going to affect the balance of anywhere near the top, but it will make those, you know, that back half of the grid a little bit more competitive. But again, I went directly to whether that's going to be the first move into introducing more teams onto the grid. Ed, what do you think? Or Thomas, because you're fucking ready to go.
It's an interesting take, Walker. I think it would be a great idea, or it is a great idea, mainly based on the point that you said, the back end markers or the back end drivers would be, I think, a little bit more competitive, whether that be, you know, 1 point or 2 points or 3 points. I think they would want to get those points and would fight harder. Because right now it is, let's say, 11th or 12th. You're not really fighting that much per se. But if you know there's a point, you're going to give it all your effort and you're going to try to get that point and you're going to try to get that money and hopefully, you know, make a difference in the standings. So I think it's a great idea. I hope they implement it and it's going to, I think, mix up the grid a little bit and have some more competitive racing.
Before you answer this one here, Ed, or at least put your two cents in, I wanted to make another point. Walker, I'd never really thought about that. You know, that was a great observation that, like, if that was your first take on it, is like, hey, is this going to open the door for adding another team or a couple teams to the grid? Makes complete sense. The logic is there 100%. I guess I would further this and just say, why don't you just give points to everyone on the grid? Like 20th place be 1 point and just kind of spread the points out that way. And, you know, obviously we'll have to heavier, you know, front end load the winner's points and obviously change that up. Ultimately, the, you know, the drivers and constructors championship will be a much higher number in terms of like what those final numbers are, but that would put competition all the way through the grid. That means the guy fighting from 20th to 19th place is still going to be, that means every pass, every overtake has value. So those drivers that are like in the back half of the grid are still going to race in a big, big way. So I just want to put that out there before Ed kind of sends out his two cents.
I mean, I agree. But before I continue, Drew, like, enlighten me on this. The changes for the scoring, it's drivers and constructors or just constructors or just drivers?
I think it would just be both.
Be both? Okay.
Yeah. Because ultimately, like, it would have to affect both in the same way.
Okay. So the reason why I asked that is because, like, if I may make a suggestion, the drivers, no. Because it kind of like gives that vibe of the, you know, participation medal to the 20th driver. What's the point of having scoring if everyone is going to get a point? However, constructors, maybe yes. Reason behind it is that constructors is the one that gives you the ranking on how much money are you going to get the end of the year. So the drivers leave it up until 10, and that's the scoring, because at the end of the day, like any type of racer, it's just like if everyone else gets a point, it's just like, what's the point of us racing? Because everyone is going to get a medal, everyone's going to get the participation trophy, everyone's feelings are going to be, you know, taken care of. I don't want that. I would much rather have constructors having a larger amount of points, giving an opportunity for lower teams or, you know, the bottom half of the grid to kind of like, we need to finish the race. We need to score a little bit more, and we can't crash our cars, or we need to make our cars a little bit more reliable. And at that point, like if they score enough races, or they finish enough races, score a little bit higher, then they can get more points, and then they can get more money at the end of the day. So that would be my take on it. Drivers, leave that alone, because if you do that, the drivers will start a revolt and be like, why are we giving points to everyone? Doesn't make sense. It's not a competition anymore.
So Ed, interesting, because when Drew posed that question, my first thought was participation ribbons. I was like, well, now everyone's just gonna fucking get something. I was sitting here thinking about it as you guys were discussing. I was like, well, I'm not sure if that's the case. Like, I can see the case for it. And I don't know if it makes that much of a difference whether you're gonna split it up between drivers and teams or they both get it. But I think, you know, does it make that race for 18th, 19th, and 20th more intense, more competitive? If points are awarded, you know, for the constructors, for drivers, for whoever, right? Performance-based rewards, whatever it might be, like, does that incentivize better racing? Does it incentivize fewer teams to retire cars, you know, three quarters through a race if You know, they don't have the pace and they're just really not going to get into the points of the top 10. I think it would be interesting to discuss further and just kind of analyze and think about it a little bit further, because I think it's something that would change the landscape of the series a little bit, but I'm not sure if it would be for the better or the worse yet.
It's good to test, I would say. Like, there's no wrong answer in that, but it will ultimately end up on results at the end of the year and how the drivers think about it. Because I already have an idea, or I can hear in the back of my head, Max Verstappen is going to be like, I'm done with racing. I'm going to leave Formula One if you're going to give points to everyone else.
Well, Ed, first of all, there's always a wrong answer. And secondly, that has been our very first installment of
Box Box.
Mailbox, box, box, baby. That's it.
There we go. Before we sign up for the day, we have one of our other favorite longstanding segments of the show. Name that sponsor. You know how it works. I'm going to name a sponsor. The boys here have to guess the team that they sponsor and also what the company does. Last week, we went for a pitiful, disgusting 0-3. No one got anything right. Terrible.
That's par for the course, though. We're brutal at this.
Exactly.
Which goes to show that we don't prepare. We don't study. This is all off the cuff. This is really just, I mean, it's really kind of like just fucking shots in the dark and maybe something hits every once in a while, but it's still fun. So the first one we're going to go for is Kaust. Kaust, K-A-U-S-T.
I'm going to take a shot in the dark. I'm going to say Haas, and I'm going to say like kitchen stuff, like appliances. I don't know what that's been popped into my head.
I'm going to go with, let's go with Mercedes. Sounds like a German name. So let's go with like CNC, like machinery equipment.
Okay.
I will go with not Red Bull, but V-Carb, industrial equipment.
Stealing my answer.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. So this is going to be possibly the most obscure
Tell us.
Round of name that sponsor ever, because okay. I saw the name. I went to Google it, and no one was going to get this. There's no chance in hell anyone was going to get this.
I was just setting a seed earlier.
Kaust is actually an acronym for King Abdullah University of Science and Technology. Just FYI, now you know.
There's a fun fact for you.
And Kaust aspires to be a destination for scientific and technological education and research, by inspiring discoveries to address global challenges. It's a university based out of Saudi Arabia that sponsors the McLaren Formula One team.
Wow.
Go fucking figure.
Wow.
You know it's cheaper to just like buy the tickets to all the races than to get a shitty, than to just pay all this money for a sponsorship just so you get some backstage passes. Jesus.
Oust. The King Abdullah University of Science and Technology. Wow. No one was getting that one.
Yeah,
so apologies. Apologies in advance. Number two, Regent Sea Cruises. Regent Sea Cruises.
Oh, Sea Cruises. So I'm going to say it's some sort of like cruise liner or vacation cruise liner for cruises.
Thomas is on it.
I'm going to say Williams.
I'm going to go with Alpine, and I think Regency Cruises it's a cruise liner for, you know, the general public for, yeah, vacations, etc.
I would say Haas and a travel agency app, just like Trivago or Kayak or whatnot.
Regency Cruises is a sea cruise operator, and it is a sponsor on Aston Martin. Aston Martin, there we go. Full circle.
Papa
Stroll. All right. This is another one that's just fucking blowing my mind. Oakberry.
Oakberry. It is on Mercedes, and it is a investment firm.
Mercedes tech okay. company.
McLaren clothing company.
All of you are wrong. Oakberry sponsors Haas, and Oakberry is a healthy fast food company that makes acai bowls.
Wow. They must be selling a lot of acai bowls.
They
sponsor an F1 team.
Oakberry acai bowls. I mean, mind you, it's Haas, but still, is a healthy fast food chain present in more than 35 countries with more than 600 stores. That's a lot of goddamn fucking acai bowls.
Good for them.
You know what?
Haas eats kudos to the acai. Berry bowls. Let's go, bud.
Oh, fuck it. Promoting a healthy living. There are three locations here in Toronto, if anyone is interested, and I'm sure they have one close to the bunker, given the fact they have 600 worldwide. You know, looking at this gives me some hope that, you know, maybe Parc Fermé can scratch together some dollars and throw it at Williams or something like that. I mean, if Oakberry can make it happen, certainly.
We can definitely sponsor
it. Media titans such as ourselves can make our way into the world of Formula One sponsorship.
100%.
Anyways, boys, that was fun. We will be back next week talking about Miami, which is coming up in 2 weeks. This has been Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, check out the Discord. All the links are in the show notes. And we will talk to you soon. Ciao for now.